Welcome to the Misophonia Podcast. This is Season 7, Episode 21. My name is Adil Ahmad, and I have misophonia. This week I'm talking to Dan, a visual artist based in Glasgow, Scotland, who works with projected visuals for live performances and installations. Dan's miso actually is a relatively new issue for him, rather than having started at a young age. We talk about coping methods, anger management, getting support from family and friends, and the role of art in mental health. I've got a link to Dan's website in the show notes. Definitely check it out. After the show, please let me know what you think. You can reach out by email at hello@misophoniapodcast.com or hit me up on Instagram or Facebook at Misophonia Podcast. Please head over, leave a quick review or rating wherever you listen to the show, whether it's Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps us get driven up in their algorithms and reach more listeners. A few of my usual announcements. Thanks for the incredible ongoing support of our Patreon supporters. If you feel like contributing, you can read all about the various levels at patreon.com/misophoniapodcast. And I want to mention the self-help book Sounds Like Misophonia, which was just released in November, written by Dr. Jane Gregory and I, is available now everywhere around the world, online and in stores. Very excited to see that out there. This episode is also sponsored by the personal journaling app that I developed called Basel, B-A-S-A-L. Basel provides AI-powered insights into your journal entries and guides you with new writing prompts based on those insights, and you can explore different therapy approaches and modalities. It's available on iOS and Android. Check the show notes or go to hellobasel.com. All right, now here's my conversation with Dan. Dan, welcome to the podcast. Good to have you here.
Yeah, lovely to be here. Thanks very much.
Of course. Do you want to tell the audience kind of where you're located?
I am in Glasgow in Scotland, although I grew up in Yorkshire in the north of England, so my voice, my accent isn't typically Scottish.
Yeah. No worries, no worries. Yeah, I wasn't able to tell this time. But I do want to maybe talk a little bit about what you do over there.
Yeah, I moved here to Scotland about 14 years ago to study, and I was studying at the art school, an artist, and I've predominantly worked in art spaces as a visual artist and periphery roles, as well as more recently in the realm of education a little bit as well. So it's a really good place for that. I'm glad to be here in Scotland.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And we were introduced through Ross, who was on the podcast some time ago. I guess when this goes out, he was on like early fall 2023. You know, that's great. So he's a composer, you're a visual artist. And he mentioned that, you know, obviously you have misophonia and have some interesting thoughts. I'm always interested in creative people with misophonia. Do you want to set the landscape as to kind of like, you know, what's going on with you these days? How is misophonia affecting your life?
Yeah, thanks. And great nod. Ross is indeed a great composer, a true Scotsman, true friend as well. So, it was nice that I was introduced to the podcast through him, but also he mentioned about our conversations having been helpful learning around misophonia. So I'm really glad to have the chance to talk a little bit about misophonia, as I find it's affecting me daily now, but in a way that I feel a lot more aware than I have been, and really benefiting from that awareness. And I felt having the chance to discuss it with you in this format might be a useful way to share with people that I love and I care about it in my life that are also affected by how misophonia affects me.
That's exactly the point of the podcast, and that's great that if it can kind of these conversations can kind of help, whenever these conversations help other people, it's great. So is it usually I know for Ross it's a lot. I remember there's a lot of pigeon action in Scotland, which is kind of a problem.
The seagulls,
yeah, or seagulls, right. So yeah, I mean, daily life for you, is it that kind of environmental stuff at home? You're an artist, so I'm always curious, kind of like, are you affected at work, or you know, when you're trying to create art?
Yeah, it's a really interesting place. Where do I start from? Because I feel like I'm joining a very well-informed conversation that you've built through the podcast, but it's useful to try and think, how is it to describe misophonia to somebody who's never heard the word before, and also to caveat that I'm describing my experience of it.
Yeah.
So it's, for me, I have gone through different stages, referring to it as a sound sensitivity, and at times it's most useful to have just the very top level, what how you might describe to somebody that being sensitive to sound, you'd like to make a change or excuse yourself for acting in a way that they wouldn't expect. And then it's also been a chance to reflect on a journey for me. I'd sort of highlight over the last 4 or 5 years, in which I've been a lot more aware, and then over the last 4 or 5 months felt like I've become more informed as well. So benefiting from that, that development.
Yeah. And then I guess maybe kind of like also going back to, maybe we can go chronologically. I'm kind of curious, where did things start for you? Was it at home?
Yeah. Growing up? I suppose, well, as I said, over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, but I would say that time frame around 4 years ago, just prior to the pandemic as well, I became very aware of sensitivity with sound, and built from that, actually, a bit of a surprise. I looked back in my Evernote app, which I record all sorts of notes, responses, and I found an earlier mention that I had written down the word misophonia in 2017. So that was interesting for me in two ways. One, that I perhaps had dabbled with it, but also whether I'd forgotten it intentionally or been a bit too busy to give it the attention at the time.
Also, it really didn't. Yeah. It really is pretty recent for me. I must have brain farted and just not processed that, because I just assume it starts so early for everyone. So it really so going back to childhood, you really don't have any memories of such a thing.
Well, as I think, as I say, over the last 4 or 5 months, I'm thinking a lot more. How do I relate to accounts that people share of childhood trauma? And I'd say I had a relatively, well, privileged and happy childhood. I would allow, though, that it was often turbulent at times. Growing up in Yorkshire with my mum and my dad and one sister. And I feel it's pretty safe to share in this context that we went through a lot of challenges. It was more for me early teens, and that was around a time when my mum was struggling a lot with depression and living with that, and also my sister was going through a bit of a whirlwind teenage period, and it wasn't uncommon as well through that time for my parents to, or family members to, argue. So there were things that I was hiding from, and I think I realize in retrospect that how much that conditioned me as a person, to whether it was directly towards misophonia or sound sensitivity, but it definitely has conditioned me to be somebody who tries to avoid some conflict or to make sure. I'm really hesitant to ask of anybody, interrupt or change their habits. So that, where you ask about the earlier memories, that definitely feels relevant, but without feeling like I've pieced it all together yet.
Yeah, you kind of describe like a walking on eggshells kind of situation maybe sometimes.
Yeah, very much so, which is It's a great point, Adil, but also it's regrettable that I found in later life that my misophonia has, that's been a consequence that other people have felt like they're a bit on eggshells around me because
Right.
I guess to tie it together where I mentioned this first note that I took of misophonia, it was during a period where I'd had quite a lot of change in my life and I went through CBT, which was I initiated it really because I wanted to address challenges I had in my temper. And I think at that time, if I took a note of misophonia, I was starting to realize there was lots of factors that might cause me to struggle with my temper. And although I was never violent in any way, I was a lot more at that time conflict, or what do I mean? And willing to argue, and I suppose I'd normalized that. But the catalysts for it, I was wondering how much it was to do with other factors, stress and challenges, but then living circumstances and sound on reflection were quite a big factor there.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. Yeah, obviously, feelings of anger are kind of a big deal for us, and it makes sense that, yeah, if you, well, actually, did you know what misophonia was as a term around that time when you went in for to get, CBT
I
treatment
don't think I
for
did.
anger? Yeah, okay.
And I felt like 3 years on from that, when I first started to use the term, that it was brand new to me. So it was a bit of a surprise that I realized I did take a note of it. I maybe just didn't fully understand what it was. And I suppose that brings us on to something that would feel helpful to share is the journey that a lot of people, I assume, with misophonia go through of different ways of describing it. And I think initially I would use comparisons that are helpful in the short term, but actually problematic in the long term, as we'd say it's relating the outcome be to challenges with temper, but also early comparisons I would make with OCD. And that was helpful in the initial term to go, okay, I understand, for friends and family to understand what sort of condition or what misophonia might be to some degree. But yeah, in the longer term, it caused a bit of misunderstanding as well.
Yeah, it definitely gets roped into to OCD, probably because the definition of OCD is usually kind of misunderstood. OCD is kind of intrusive thoughts when you're not when nothing's really happening necessarily, but misophonia is a response to something. But yeah, no, it totally makes sense. And then it gets further confused because the treatments are so different. The exposure therapy is actually part of OCD treatment, and obviously we wouldn't want to go there for misophonia. But another thing is another thing you mentioned is yeah, before when we don't know what misophonia is, we usually are labeled as by other people, but also ourselves as just kind of irritable, angry people. And I can see how that could have been a factor for you to maybe seek some professional help for just kind of like a blanket temper kind of issue, anger management.
I think one thing that I also would add that I've learned in experience is that a lot of other factors affect how sensitive I am with misophonia. Or by that I mean, if I am at a stressful period in my life, then my misophonia would be a lot more present and I would be a lot more sensitive. And so, yeah, that then brings the challenge of people trying to understand why one situation will be very hard, and then months later it's okay, that same situation. It's a challenge to try and explain that, but it helps lead me towards some of the approaches to overcome it. And it's been amazing listening to a lot of other guests on the podcast. regularly referring to living situation and moving. And I think for me, a key catalyst around recognizing that I have an unusual level of sensitivity was a house move. And I could identify how I had a few flatmates. This is going back about 4 years ago in Glasgow, just before the pandemic. And there were certain things that I found really triggering that felt quite normal, quite understandable. And that was a flatmate playing the banjo at 6 in the morning or slamming doors late at night. And yeah, these sorts of intrusions. But then there were other things that were really, I was very sensitive to, that felt very normal. And I recognize that reaction. And yeah, maybe it's helpful to try and articulate what a reaction is for anybody who hasn't felt that. From my perspective, a trigger or a reaction with misophonia is a sense of panic, seems an appropriate word. Another thing about my living situation right now is that I am an Airbnb host, and I am living with a situation of a spare room and guests come in regularly. And the right now, I meant to caveat at the start that there were some guests arriving who have just arrived, and quite possibly them arriving, logging onto the Wi-Fi has given this little trick. But also, it's a great example of the sort of circumstances in things changing, maybe metaphorically, that it starts to interfere with the connection. But yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting metaphor there. Yeah, maybe actually I was going to back up to the reasons you, yeah, I mean the reasons you went to therapy again were kind of for anger management. Is it safe to say, like, it was, not to get maybe too much of the family stuff, but like you were your like loved ones kind of being kind of the subject of some of your some incidents that kind of led you to seek help.
Yeah, at the time I was living with somebody very briefly, and I was quite argumentative, and I feel that I recognized that I had normalized that as a normal work outlet and a normal rhythm. And it was really good to seek out help to change that, and really empowering to do that over a period of time, and recognize that I went over a year or so from somebody who felt that conflict was normal to somebody who was adverse, very much irritated friends and partners that I wouldn't argue. And but it's very encouraging because I felt a recognition of, yes, your upbringing conditions you a lot, but there is potential to overcome it, and that gives me hope in addressing misophonia, that while it may have been caused by a lot of events in the past, it is something that I might be able to work with. And in this example, talking and reframing it mentally, I think, was a real help.
Did you find that being an artist that finishing pieces of work, or even the process of creating art would kind of maybe help you calm down, or at least kind of like make you less sensitive? Because I know when I do stuff like that, I definitely feel a sense of I don't know, some holistic calm or something, where I can kind of like manage through the next short period of time, and I just kind of like the amplitude of the triggers isn't as great. I'm just curious if art has been kind of a help for you.
Yeah, definitely. And having time where I can get stuck into a project, and then you mentioned a sort of sense of completion is euphoric, and it does feel like a process and circumstances in which I am able to revel in an environment I create and control, and have often worked in different circumstances, often in the evening and slightly out of the way, so that I could enhance that lack of distraction, interruption, and yeah, really enjoy having that practice.
Maybe let's talk about kind of your day-to-day coping mechanisms. Are they kind of earplugs, avoidance? Kind of curious, kind of like how you muddle through the day.
Yeah, certainly. So initially, well, I suppose the first key coping mechanism for me was getting some AirPods. And to give you a bit of context, where I found misophonia hardest in my life was during the pandemic. And I had quite a comical situation that I, within a few weeks, went to live with my oldest friend, Lewis. And it was really well intended that we would live together, give each other a bit of support. And we didn't know, as nobody did, how long we would be in lockdown and the bigger picture. But I was working at the time, working remotely on computer. That was the first time I stepped into an outside of art in education. So it was quite a desk-based daily routine, which in some ways was welcome, and everything else was fluid in the pandemic. But Lewis, bless him, was making recording an album. He's a musician, and just the comical scenario of the two of us in the same house, me trying to focus on the challenging work. I was building a chatbot at the time and needing all the headspace and to control the
Right.
sound well through the wall, my friends recording the same riff again and again and singing. And that forced me to quickly learn and find good coping mechanisms. And it was a combination of controlling sound in the immediate. I got some AirPods. The AirPods Pro were a total game changer for me, getting noise cancellation. And it was funny. I remember going, I ordered them to collect on my birthday, and I was sat outside near the shop I would collect them for, and I saw a friend walking past across the grass, and I shouted. And they totally ignored me, but I realized they had the AirPods in as well. So I was like, oh, this is a good sign. I'm getting, yeah, getting a chance to condition or control the world a little. And I think that the best investment for me, and I haven't been without them much since. There was, yeah, a couple of memorable occasions without them. So yeah, combining that with some other similar earplugs, and I actually over the last few months have felt like I really appreciate having a gradient of alternatively having sort of the flare model of earpods, which are able to just soften and take the top and bottom off a lot of sounds, and then loop, which are and earplugs that adjust to really help to different levels blocking out sound. And on that initial level, I think that's quite fundamental for me in coping mechanisms. But then
So for
that's in,
you, yeah, sorry, go on.
yeah, oh well, just thinking that linked with that is I use AirPods a lot to engage with the Calm app, which is, are you familiar with the Calm app at all?
No. Or
I'd say it collects. Maybe a mainstay is supporting meditation as a practice, but also I love it at supporting nap
Oh,
and
Calm? Like
napping.
the like the like kind of like Headspace. No, yeah, I'm familiar with that. Yeah, for sure.
Brilliant. And well, from that, supporting controlling sound while sleeping as well. And a really helpful catalyst from that was that they host not quite podcasts, but they call it master classes. And one of them, which was focused on a book or an overview of a book, which was called The Depression Cure, but that book was also introducing a lifestyle or antidepressive lifestyle. And kind of, it's that it's approach that whether you're going through a period of challenged mental health or depression in your life or not, these elements that it highlights about your lifestyle, working on them will really help you in any circumstance. And I found that really did work for me, particularly in that point we talked about controlling the periphery context, minimizing the times in my life where I did feel hyper or have felt hypersensitive with me.
Yeah, so you want to talk a little bit about the, you said something about controlling the periphery sounds. Are there any kind of techniques or mind framing that were particularly helpful?
Well, I think for me, in rather directly controlling the sounds, but I think controlling the other, like certain key elements of your life, recognizing that you're getting enough sleep, eating well, light exposure, diet, social contact, and I think these things do help. And I suppose to summarize it, it's about realizing a certain element of routine really helps me feel comfortable, particularly a morning routine. I love to get up, do a bit of yoga, and get a cup of Yorkshire tea. And if I can do that in peace, then my tolerance for whatever sounds the day is going to throw at me is full strength. But if I get interrupted in that initial period, then I'm hypersensitive. It's a real challenge.
No, I can totally relate to that. And have you, I guess, I mean, have you met any other people with misophonia? I know you're relatively new to the community, other than
Well,
Ross, I guess.
yeah, it's been great talking to Ross in person, and I'm really grateful to have met a few other people. My partner at the moment is somebody who relates to having misophonia, which is really wonderful how considerate they are. And I also had a real pleasant surprise that I mentioned I am an Airbnb host, which, for all having the shared accommodation in the past has been very challenging, Airbnb brings a degree more predictability and control, and it shortens whatever condition that another person might bring to the sound to generally a much shorter period of days, a week or so. So the surprise that came out of that was that an Airbnb guest who had also been on your show, Laurel Thompson, who it was a little while ago, but
Yeah, it
yeah,
was. Right.
she was really great to talk to as we got chatting while she was the guest, and she produces artwork about her experience with misophonia as well. So that's great.
Yeah, I think I met her. I think that's the one I've met at the one of the Misophonia conventions back in person back in the day. That's wow. What a coincidence. That's great.
It was a really good one that steered me on to listening to her podcast, and then her conversation with you. It was eye-opening in seeing how, well, I've talked a little bit about finding other forms of therapy that aren't directly towards misophonia actually help me with my journey on misophonia. Laura had had some experiences, and I've enjoyed hearing other people talk about more direct approach in therapy, and that then was quite heartening that there's some professional direct support out there, but also
Some.
yes, also like quite in inspiring hearing her talk about how it influenced her creativity, and then some ideas she talked about in the therapy discussing colors of sounds, which is new to me, but a little bit of chat with Ross since, and it's definitely something I want to explore more.
Yeah, like synesthesia, like seeing, or is it,
I suppose,
maybe
good
related
to
to that, I guess, seeing colors and, or thinking of
know.
colors, what do you think of sounds?
But then, when I've heard people start to talk about, oh, white noise is helpful, or I find brown noise challenging, or yellow noise is different circumstance, and I am really fascinated by that. I suppose In my creative practice over the last decade, I've steered a lot towards working with projection and making visuals for musicians.
Right.
So I'm really interested in how I can respond to sound with
Yeah.
a projector and projecting video in that context. Interested then to get into maybe the theory of it to some degree. Some of the conversation there.
Yeah, no, that'd be super interesting. I mean, actually, speaking of conversation, I'm just curious, kind of like how misophonia came up with Laurel. Like, was that were you both trying to avoid making sound or something, or was did she just have a t-shirt or something?
I
Curious, kind
think
of like how they came up.
what was really heartening was it was a real genuine kind of organic comment of, I think there was some joke about sound sensitivity, and Laurel was traveling with a friend, Owen, who was just an amazing example of friendship and support in that she didn't seem to have misophonia herself, but she was really aware, willing to make changes and make jokes about it, and I think be both, yeah, sympathetic and a super friend. And it was really heartening to then, I think a really natural conversation came up briefly of saying how, oh, I might have asked, have you heard of misophonia? And they both burst out
Oh,
laughing because it's a big
yeah.
part of their life. Well, it felt like
Right.
that sort of situation, yeah.
That's super cool. That's super cool. So
Yeah.
maybe about your family members, do you or your friends, like have you noticed, even not family members, but people close to you, has it created any kind of rifts or wedges in relationships, and kind of maybe, I don't know, pushed you apart? Could be
Yeah,
a sensitive issue, I know, but
I think it was particularly hard in the situation with my friend living with Lewis during the pandemic, and he's really understanding, but it's a helpful thing to explain how I'm sure a lot of people relate with misophonia. It's very hard to explain what you're going through at a time when you're feeling very
in
stressed
the
and
moment,
triggered.
yeah. That's the worst time to explain it, yeah.
And so I feel like when you ask about examples of it causing rifts with friends and loved ones, then a lot of it has come from that initial frustration or inability to explain. And that's probably what inspired me to want to have a conversation where I could try and articulate a little bit while I'm much calmer how I see a trigger and reaction. But the patience of friends and family members has been really heartening in time. I think following a good 9 6 8 7 8 9 months living with Lewis, I was really needing a break. I was finding I was quite stressed all the time, expecting something to trigger me, and it was good for him to have a break. So I went to spend a few weeks with my parents, which, having not lived with them for a long time, a decade or so, I knew was potentially going to be more triggering, more challenging, going into the house where I'd grown up, and knowing that they were also 9 months into a pandemic. And so it was, on one level, just trying to be safer about any COVID circumstances. But I remember sitting with them and trying to, for the first time, say, oh, so I know it's been really normal that I'll come and stay for a few days or a few weeks, but this time there's a new element. It's really present. And initially using these sort of terms of sound sensitivity and a bit like OCD, and bless my parents with, all so well intended, they were apologizing for things being physically a bit untidy or certain other elements. And I had to try and find calmer ways to say these sorts of points, like how I am struggling with sound coming through the walls and I'm needing to control a little bit more environment and have some more boundaries and have the morning routine. And it's been a few years since, and I've tried to take steps forward to explaining to them how much misophonia affects me, because I would say it is on a daily, it informs my daily routine. And while I feel quite happy to have found ways of coping with it, it definitely has limited some times that I've spent with friends and family members, as I become more aware and try and avoid being in any stressful situations, both for me but also for them. I don't like being somebody who is triggered, shutting down a little bit. And it's really been a case of taking it little steps at a time. So the first time that I've felt I'm gonna wear earplugs and we'll eat in the same room, but it's gonna be for me at arm's length, or I suppose having realized that a lot of the triggers that I have with misophonia are quite common for other people, interested in working out how is a healthy way of sharing that or explaining that. And yeah, I don't think there's a necessarily a fast track, but I do think, yeah, that gaining some awareness, we could start to have a wider awareness that would really help people, especially in a family dynamic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, did you say you had siblings as well?
I have one sister,
Okay.
and yeah, we grew up together, but we haven't lived together for a very long time. As well, I've been in Scotland for the last 14 years. She's often been abroad as well. Yeah, but I
Was she like
don't.
a, I'm curious kind of like how that relationship was, but did she know about your misophonia? Oh, well, I mean, you didn't really have it much growing up, but like, I don't know. Doesn't sound like she has misophonia, but I'm curious kind of what she thinks about all this.
We have been close recently and talked, and she's really good listener and good at understanding, and I think that she can relate in different elements that she knows it's important to be heard. And I think, well, she hasn't ever said that she relates directly as having misophonia. I think she's got the understanding of, I know what environment we grew up in and what was great about it and what was challenging, and seeing just she's, I suppose, the only other person that can fully relate to some of that. But yeah, the way that we've talked, it's been really helpful. And to what degree I need them to understand. For my sister, I feel a little bit less than my parents because I rarely sort of go to stay with her. But yeah, it's helpful.
Yeah, and I'm curious. Yeah, you're talking about boy, wanting to, the need for more awareness about misophonia to help in family dynamics and beyond. Actually, I'm curious. Kind of like, have you thought about? I don't know what kind of projects you're working on now. I'm just curious if you've thought about how. Different ways to incorporate misophonia into artwork or use art as a way to teach the world or teach a little about misophonia or what I'm actually more interested in is how to teach misophones more about the complexity of it or just how we're not alone the different layer the different emotional layers that that we're all aware of but most of the people takes much it's much harder to explain to them. Yeah, I'm just curious kind of if you've thought about how to use art to kind of like express misophonia.
Yeah, I'm really interested in my main passion being working with moving image and film. And I recognised earlier this year you were sharing that there was a film made. So I'm really interested to see that and to see other people's explorations, I
There's been a
think.
number of short films. Yeah, I don't know. I think
Great.
you're following my Instagram, but there was
Yeah.
like a puppet short film. There's one from Iran, which had no words, but it's more kind of like a musical. It's kind of really interesting. There's one out of Canada that's in a bunch of film festivals. And there's more being made, actually. It's interesting. But
Good.
yeah, I
Yeah.
think we need.
Big advocate of the power of film to create space for people to reflect and connect. And I think for me, that's an aspiration. I am making short film, and that's hinting more at our relationship with technology and how that affects our mental health. But I aspire over time to d directly address misophonia. I think in that's talking in the context of short film, screen based, but also I'm fascinated having a practice that a lot of my work has been events and live shows and being responsive to sound in a visual way. And I think that there's something quite exciting to explore there, like the potential of how we put in our human nature, we synchronize a lot of what we see. And I'm thinking how one of my favorite music videos is the Chemical Brothers' Star Guitar. It's well worth seeing. It's a vision out of a train traveling through the countryside, and whatever you hear is represented by something you see for every symbol. There's a lamppost, for example, and yeah, the horizon reflects like the crescendos. And I think where I've steered over the last few years is more to working in that less music videos directly, but VJing, so live responses to sound. And really excited to build on that and to create environments. I think that could also visualize how it feels sometimes to have misophonia as being triggered. For me, it's not necessarily experience that is cognitive. It seems something a lot more reactive. It's when we
Absolutely,
talk
yeah.
about, yeah, the sense of a trigger cutting straight through your mind and triggering your fight and flight. And I think that sort of live responsive element in BJ context is a way to start communicating that as well.
Yeah, no, you're right. It seems to be more connected to that, the older reptilian limbic system, more of a fear response. Yeah, no, that's very interesting. And so yeah, something else you said about I would definitely want to check out that video. I don't know if I've seen a Chemical Brothers video since Block Rock and Beats, but I should definitely check. I don't want to check that new one out, because I've been reading and just thinking a lot about how it seems like we're, I don't know, less connected to our senses organically, and whether that has some through technology and marketing, and we're kind of like, we're a very visual society, and it's, like kind of like how we have highly processed food, or the stimulation that we receive is tends to a lot of times tends to be very kind of prepackaged and processed. I don't know. It doesn't necessarily, I don't have any scientific basis for this, but maybe it's more of a metaphorical or artistic thing. But I wonder if, like, the less time we spend organically engaging with our senses, if that is somehow messing with our ability to filter sounds as danger or not.
Yeah, I think that experiences that were to the contrary support that suggestion. So I had an experience of 1 month being offline. It was an artist residency, and I found that among other bonuses, the benefits for my sleep and for my focus when I did want to work, but also I was a lot less sensitive, and I do directly see where overstimulation can, yeah, lead me to being a lot more triggered, and yeah, linking the two as well.
Yeah, no, yeah, overstimulation. Yeah, actually, that's a good idea. I think people talk about like internet fasts, but yeah, I think there's I finally actually see some merit in that, to maybe do something like that. And it's not just, I don't think it's just overstimulation. I think it's just the type of stimulation that we get is kind of like, it's like fast food. So is that really healthy for our senses? Actually, do you want to talk about some of the art that you do now? I think I was watching some interviews of and you mentioned about how you're interested in the kind of the intersection of I think tech and how especially modern tech and how it kind of affects our thinking and information. Do you want to talk about kind of what you do, and not necessarily even related to misophonia?
Well, yeah, thanks. I studied art and philosophy, and the philosophy side of it, I got really fascinated by thinking about technology. And it feels like we're living through such a significant time. I'm 34 now, and I've lived through what feels like a real revolution. And with that, we'll have somewhat of privilege, but also maybe a sense of responsibility to evaluate how the change in our field of vision, our field of connectedness, our field of empathy is affecting us as people. And maybe as a generation, we have a chance to compare that to a time before in a way that won't be possible for future younger generations. So I felt really driven to work with technology as well, because where previously and in future love painting, but that wasn't the right language. So that's what drew me towards working with projection and moving image, because that felt the right language to talk about technology and our relationships. So at the moment, I have combined doing a lot of, as I said, visuals for live musicians and also video for releases, not in the live context, but the project that I've been working on for the longest is called Navigating Technologies, and it is going to be a film exploring how a metaphor of how we learn to navigate the ocean, as that was a challenging new space that had a lot of potential, but also a lot of danger for how we learn to navigate online space. And going to be really bringing that together over the coming months. Looking forward to sharing it and the Outer Hebrides later this year, and then building on it from there into maybe something that will work in a short film festival context next year. So I don't directly see that relating to misophonia as much as definitely a sense of responsibility that art can really help to create space to reflect on how we see the world and how it affects us. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Where's your work usually shown? Is it, if it's projection, obviously it's in an installation somewhere. Do you display around Glasgow or around the UK?
Been fortunate over the last decade to show in lots of different places, countries. At the moment, it will be, as I say, the next project will be in an art gallery called Anne Lanterre up in Stornoway, which is very far north, remote island. But in other
contexts, I think you went quiet again just after you said you've been like getting a show in a lot of different places, and you're probably listing countries, but we didn't hear it. could you maybe list those places? I want to hear all those places.
I've been very fortunate to show work over the last decade in and around different places in Scotland and abroad in film festival context. But the next project will be over in the Outer Hebrides, a very far north island, remote island in Scotland. In the past, it's been great to be showing around Scotland or film festivals in England, north of England. Looking forward to bringing something that is even more accessible, as less. I'm really excited and will pursue the live experience, but also in this day and age where we can connect people best in or widest is online as well. So, we'll continue to share work and film in that context in the future.
Yeah, very cool. Okay. And actually, yeah, that brings me. It makes me think of another question. When you're doing shows live, do you ever get triggered? you're trying to. I guess your projections are probably kind of stationary. I'm just curious if you're having to set up your work and then turn it on and then have to be there, and then people are just kind of like coughing while
it's funny
experiencing your work. Well,
thinking about doing visuals for performances, then using software and the terminology is triggers. So I'm setting up a series of triggers, which when certain things happen, then the lights respond, the video responds, the projector responds. But yeah, just playing there with the terminology, because for me, I think when I get to share work live, I feel a lot less sensitive. I feel really excited and really capable, and because I'm bringing a degree of control into what the response is to a sound, then that feels really comfortable, and that's almost a clue for me of part of the journey ahead, how to feel like I can live with misophonia in an even more comfortable way will be creating circumstances where I can control the responses more. And that's everything from having the coping mechanisms myself that I can practically act, putting earplugs, or I'm laughing at a new coping strategy that you've reminded me of here. I'm a big fan of coconut oil. It's for circumstances where you might find doors are squeaky or something. Yeah, I really recommend it.
I'm a WD-40 guy, but coconut oil seems much more environmentally sustainable.
Yeah, it's white and it doesn't smell bad. And anyway, yeah, just didn't want to let that miss this conversation.
No, that's a
But
great tip. I haven't heard co coconut oil as a that's a great tool because you can get it at anywhere, grocery store. Just run over,
yeah, it's
come
great for
back,
cooking as well,
pour it on your door, pour it on the hinges and or your neighbor's hinges.
yeah, I'll start buying everyone it for Christmas. But yeah, that is as a an action that I can do if I feel treated, and as well as the longer game stuff, which is having the really valuable conversations that people feel aware and maybe able to adjust if they know how to. And yeah, I think performing live just is an environment that almost represents that sort of future ideal scenario where the examples of friends that have been so kind and understood when I've tried to explain this failure. And sometimes, I'm sure other people would relate to this, sometimes the act of the intention of helping, even if the action doesn't directly help, that's really heartening and really relaxes me. And so I've been in a recent example, my sister came to visit, went with some friends to a cafe, and where they'd sat at a table next to a coffee machine, and I knew that was going to make it really hard for me to enjoy having lunch and relaxing. And I said, "Oh, would you mind if we moved to this other table?" And we did. It was not a lot better at the other table, but I really felt grateful for the willingness to, and the staff as well. Trying to explain to somebody in a restaurant I'd like to move because of the sound, they must think that's a little bit unusual, but it's really heartening when they're like, okay, we can give a little bit, even if it didn't directly fix the problem. So I think me then feeling like, okay, I do have some slight control over these circumstances, that's a real help. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's that bit of control. But then what you said earlier too about how if somebody at least shows that they're trying, somehow that primitive reptilian fear seeking part of our brain feels less threatened. You know what I mean? And so I mean a lot of research that needs to be done, but I feel like these are definitely common data points that we need to be looking at. Well, Dan, we're about an hour into it. This has been great. It's great learning about your past and kind of it's funny that you met a past guest and I'm glad that you're even though you've learned about it late, that you're kind of like addressing it. Anything, I don't know, anything else you want to share with people about some insights you've had or thoughts on your journey?
Well, it does feel a real privilege to join in the podcast and the conversation, and we talked about some of the guests. Your recent discussion with the PhD student in Newcastle was really inspiring, and
Oh,
somebody I'd
yeah.
love to
Great.
connect with. Yeah, and also maybe previous to that, I guess that made me more aware of is the term like kinesthesia? sort of the visual triggers
Oh,
that come.
I didn't even talk about that. Yeah, misokinesia, right? The whole visual
Misokinesia, thank you.
triggers. Yeah.
Yeah, these things, it's just been so helpful, this sensor community. I think for me, I will try and build towards more awareness. I think the way that I can do that best is through creative practice, but I have recently been involved with amazing the Scottish Mental Health Arts and Film Festival, and hoping to keep supporting them wherever I can. And I've seen some great films that they include, and so maybe, yeah, just putting that on people's radar, and that I'll hopefully share with them some work in the future. We can bring that to the misophonia community. And actually, yeah, just one other last thought from
Yeah, please.
preparing to have this conversation. I was fascinated because I was looking for how a gauge on awareness of misophonia, and I googled the is misophonia in the Oxford English Dictionary, but I abbreviated it to OED misophonia, and it responded to me by saying, do you mean OCD misophonia? So I was fascinated with the way that even technology is kind of in some ways they're maybe exaggerating the misunderstanding. There's some potential that that could be helpful for some, but challenging for others.
Yeah, that's kind of the interesting situation we're at with technology and kind of how we're it seems like we're communicating with it more and more, but it could lead us astray.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I mean, Dan, this was super great. Yeah, I'd love to keep in touch and hear about the film festival and kind of any of the work you're doing. I'll definitely have links to you on your website in the show notes. I think you have YouTube links as well. But yeah, this has
Yeah.
been great. Thank you for coming on, and we'll definitely love to stay in touch about projects.
Yeah, thank you ever so much, Shabdil. I really appreciate your work and everybody else's sharing in the community. So much appreciated.
Thank you again, Dan. Great conversation, and yeah, very much looking forward to see more of your work. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a quick review or just hit the 5 stars wherever you listen to this podcast. You can hit me up by email at hellomisophoniapodcast.com or go to the website, misophoniapodcast.com. It's even easier to send a message on Instagram at misophoniapodcast, follow there on Facebook, and on Twitter at X, it's Misophonia Show. Support the show by visiting the Patreon at patreon.com/misophoniapodcast. Theme music, as always, is by Moby. And until next week, wishing you peace and quiet. Thank you.